This is Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. We're going to look back at some of the events and some of the news stories that have occurred over the past 7 days. We have on the line with us Kemp Haar. He is the publisher of Floor Focus magazine. How are you doing, Kemp?
Great. I've just about gotten used to this time zone.
Well, I was just going to say that you're just back from Italy, and maybe you have an Italian accent or at least spaghetti sauce on your shirt. As a result of the show, you attended the ceramic tile show, Shersai. That's in Bologna. How'd you like the show?
It was very interesting. Let me give you a little rundown on it. This was the 25th year of the Shersai show, and this show focuses on it's mostly porcelain tile, both floor and wall tile, but mostly most of what they showed was floor tile, and also some bathroom fixtures in a couple of the outer buildings. But the interesting thing, if you haven't been to a show like that, the exhibit hall is huge. I mean, it's a series of, I don't know, 20 or some buildings, and they're spread out all over a multi-hectare site. That's one thing for sure. You get a lot of exercise, and most everything that you see there is way on the cutting edge of design. When you think about it, too, the Italians, it's the center of civilization. What did we get from the Italians? They are always on the cutting edge of art and design, architecture. They're masters of proportion and perspective. Just think of some names. Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, Raphael. I mean, I guess when you live and surround yourself with all that art, you can't help but from generation to generation be able to create some pretty wild-looking or pretty forward-looking, design-oriented type of flooring. Mm.
So the things that you see take a while to show up here in North America, do you think?
Yeah, some of them will only show up in areas in this country, like in urban design type of some of them are just a little too edgy for American palette, I guess. But what you do run into, it's amazing what they can do with porcelain. Almost everything there was porcelain, which is a man-made process that's very low in porosity. You get everything from lizard to leather look. You get in the fabric area or textile, you get silk and denim. And something new this year I thought was very interesting was they were putting a woven carbon fabric on the face of some of this porcelain. That was a really neat look, very edgy. And then you get the natural or rustic look, the stone and concrete. It looks like stone and concrete, but it's actually man-made. Mm-hmm. And then you get even the metal look. You get like Graniti Finati had a really interesting metal look in some products they were coming out with.
Very interesting.
While we're talking about this, and while we're talking here on Full Radio, can you name me the guy that the famous Italian that has something to do with the radio?
Marconi.
Marconi, yeah. Actually grew up in Bologna, and when you fly in there, the name of the airport is the Marconi Airport. He's the guy that invented radio.
How about that? I've got a statue of him right up here in front of me. Kemp, tell us about some of the stands that you saw that really impressed you while you were at the show.
Well, one of the companies that's Italian-based, but it also has a plant over here in this country in Clarksville is Florum, and they had a very nice. They actually had the whole upstairs of one of these buildings, and so one of the things they were talking about is they've decided to change their whole branding structure, and not only do they have some really nice products for both the commercial side of the market and the high-end residential side of the market, but they're talking about in this country, in the U.S., they had a whole section talking about, designed in Italy and made in America. So, I talked to Jim Doherty while I was over there, and he said the interesting thing to point out is in the last 12 years, the per capita usage of tile in the United States has tripled. While it's still much lower than you'll find in other parts of the world, ceramic tile or porcelain tile is picking up. Are the share of use in this country is picking
I guess
up.
That's one reason why we're seeing so many of the Italians and others setting up shop here in the U.S. They see a lot of potential.
That's right, exactly.
Let me jump in here. Let's take a break here, and I want you to tell us a little bit more about some of the stands that you visited while you were at Chersai in Bologna. We're talking this morning with Kemp Haar, the publisher of Floor Focus magazine. He's also a partner in the website floordaily.net. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. This is Floor Radio. This is Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. We're talking this morning with Kemp Haar, the publisher of Floor Focus magazine, fresh back from Italy and visiting the Chersai show, which is hard to say, I guess, when you really get down to it.
It is.
You were talking about some of the stands that you were visiting. You know, one of the things I like about the shows, the trade shows in Italy, they're bigger and they're fancier. I think companies in Europe seem to put a lot more store in trade shows than they do here in the U.S.
You know, when you looked around, it was very hard to even fathom that this was a temporary setup. A lot of the stands that you went into, you know, they'd spent a lot of effort in building out these displays. So, you know, I'm completely agreeing with what you're saying. One of the booths we went into was the Graniti Fiandra, and they're another company, another Italian company that has an American presence. Plant up in Crossville, Tennessee, Stone Peak is owned by them, and you know, their booth at this show, they had the metallic tiles that were real urban looking. That's what you know the folks in the U.S. that would consider that to be something that they would want to put in their interior decor would be more in an urban setting. But they also had a whole series of Geologica, that's the brand name. Series, which was granite and stone and travertine, which is really what sells in this country right now, according to the folks we talked to over there. And then you had Marazzi, which also has a U.S. factory, I think, down in Texas. And believe it or not, they're the largest maker of tile in the world. And they had five business units. One interesting thing I learned by talking to them, of the five business units, four of them, and it's, by the way, they're all they're split geographically. You know, we've got the European unit, the USA unit, the Russian unit, and the Spain unit, the Italian unit, and the France unit. But when you look at all those units, the only business unit that was down last year was the USA unit. So they talked at the press event that I went to, talking about you know, the housing market and how that was affecting their overall business in the USA. So that was something that was definitely a little bit of a buzz at the show.
But everything else was up.
Yeah, all the other countries for Marazzi were up, except for their USA division.
Yeah. That's interesting. Not surprising, but interesting.
Right, and you know, it also shows you how important in the world, you know, economy the USA is, because again, it was mentioned many times while I was there. Just to mention a couple other trends I saw, there was black and white. You know, the coloration of black and white together, some of it accented with red. That was something we saw in several of the booths. Another thing that's a process that was talked about a lot was this rectified edges. When you rectify the edge of a tile in the heating and cooling process, you get a very straight edge. And what that does is when you install the product, you get very, very small grout lines. And so that's a trend. Folks, you know, worldwide do not want big grout lines anymore because of all the issues around dirt getting caught in the grout line. So that was another trend. Another thing that was talked about, a lot of the people that are there are showing their display looks like something you'd see in a hotel. So they focus on showing what their products would look like in a hospitality type environment, because they say the hospitality market sets the trend for the residential market. People go to hotels and like a look, and then they want to go back and do that look in their house.
That's interesting. I never thought about that, but that seems obviously true.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think what else we saw. I mentioned the carbon face. There were a couple of companies that were coming out with this new carbon look on
we'll see all that eventually here, I suspect.
Yeah, there was one, you know, when you start thinking about green, one of all these booths, and really the only one that was, you know, really wanted to talk about green was Emile Ceramica, which was a company over there, Italian company, and they're talking about a new product they have in their, what line was that? It looked like travertine, but it has 25% post-industrial recycled content, which helps building owners qualify for LEED points.
Interesting. Let's jump in here again with a break.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you a couple of more things about the Chersai show, where Kemp has just returned from. We're talking with Kemp Haar, the publisher of Floor Focus magazine. He's also a partner in the website floordaily.net. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. This is Floor Radio. This is Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. We have Kemp Haar on the line this morning, the publisher of Floor Focus magazine. He's also a partner in the website floordaily.net. We're talking about a trip he made to Italy and the Chersai Ceramic Tile Show, which was held last week. You know, I was able to pull a copy of a press release that was published, I guess, during the show about the press conference which you attended.
That's right.
And one of the things that they mentioned was sustainability and environmental design. And that was bigger in the press release than it was in reality, you think?
Well, you know, you didn't hear it when you walked into the booth. You know, what I was mentioning a minute ago was that in this Emile booth, that, you know, they greeted me at the door with it. And so it wasn't something that was, you know, top of mind. If you asked about it, I think several of the companies over there certainly had their story together about it. But that I was just mentioning one with Emile that was where they had the whole display set up around a green story.
I see. Well, of course, they're a player here. They're a partner with Deltile.
That's right.
In that plant in Oklahoma.
Muskogee, Oklahoma. That's
Muskogee,
right.
Oklahoma.
Yeah.
What about the turnout of the show? I know this was your first time, so you don't really have a basis of comparison. Did you get an idea from talking to other people whether the traffic was up?
No, and you know, knowing we were going to do this interview, I tried to get the information, and they haven't come out with it yet. But last year they had 91,000 visitors there, and I was of the impression that things were at least as good as last year, maybe up a little bit. So,
well, with things being good in Italy, you would imagine that it would be, you know, at least as good a show. But who knows? There was a press release on their site, but it was in Italian, and I couldn't read it.
Yeah, well, that's I think the native language over there. But you know, one of the things that I was over there for 3 days, and I got to spend one day down in Florence, and nobody ever invited me to tool around in their Maserati or their Lamborghini. So, and they're
not
made
like
right
the movies,
Bologna.
Huh?
Both
like
of those
movies.
Cars are made in Bologna.
I see. Well, that's too bad. Maybe it takes you a couple of years over there before somebody will ask you to do that.
Yeah.
So tell me about the city. How'd you like the city? How about the food?
Well, the food was very interesting. You know, when you ask them too, you know, what do you recommend? Since that you know, Bologna is not near any ocean, so their specialty, and I'm talking about for, you know, hundreds or maybe thousands of years, is pork. And it's not barbecue.
Well, that's a surprise.
No, it's, you know, it's when they start talking about their cuisine, it is pork based, but you know, prosciutto and salami, and I mean, it's excellent food. A lot of good pastas, a lot of pastries. So, you know, that's definitely a big part of the whole environment at the show.
Well, that's one really good reason to go over to the show. You know, a side reason is the food.
Oh yeah, and that region, which is in the middle northern region of Italy, is known for its food. So it was actually a nice little perk to the trip.
Well, maybe next year you get the Maserati ride.
I hope so.
I hope so too. Let me change the subject. We got about a minute left here. And this was a piece that we put on the website a week or so ago, and it's about a sort of a new format test that Home Depot is doing, and they're going to open later this month two stores, one in California, one in North Carolina, which is the company's efforts at catering to women.
I thought that's what Expo was. I read briefly what you're talking about, and you know, you've always known Home Depot as the big orange, you know,
exactly
the
right
macho persona, you know, the tool time 10, you know, you know, the male kind of thing, and now they're going to give another attempt at opening up a large. Looks like it's going to be, you know, regular size.
Regular size. Well, let me. In reading this, and we're going to take a break here and we'll be back, but to me, I think what this is, it's a design expo with lower price point products. That's what I think it is.
Okay.
And I think that one of the problems they had with the expo was that, at least initially, it was a really neat store to go shop in, but people didn't buy anything because it was all so expensive. And I think what they found out here is that if somebody goes in to buy a high-end refrigerator, they may buy something that's just, you know, lower-end, middle-of-the-road type product, and they want to buy it in the same store. So maybe that's what this is. It's an effort to try to combine, have some of the higher-end and some of the lower-end products all in the same store. Let's take a break on that. Now, we'll come back and talk a bit more about this.
All right.
Kemp Harsh with us. He's the publisher of Floor Focus Magazine, a partner in the website floordaily.net. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. Kemp Harsh on the line with us this morning, the publisher of Floor Focus Magazine. We're talking about some of the events and some of the news items over the last 7 days. We were talking about a new format store that's being rolled out, and this is a test, I guess I should say. One of the stores is in Concord, California. The other one is in Charlotte, North Carolina, right in Lowe's backyard. And this is a store that they say is designed to cater to women, and I guess that only makes sense because I also have read that women make about 80% of the buying decision when it comes to home improvement. I know that's true in my house.
Right.
And the stores are big, as you mentioned, Kemp. They're some 90,000 square feet, the same size as a regular Home Depot, except I guess the similarity seems to end there with the size. They've changed the color. There's no big orange around. They're earth tones and neutral shades. The ceilings are lower. It doesn't give you the industrial-type look that you get with Home Depot. And
what are they going to call it?
They're going to, well, let me see. Home Depot Design Center.
Okay.
And I guess you still want the Home Depot up there. And, again, this is a test, and people involved in this said that they don't have plans at this point to put these things all over the place, but if it works, I'm sure they will.
And they don't even want the you know, big part of Home Depot's business are these contractors. They don't even want the contractors to come in these stores.
Well, no, not really. I mean, it's really not aimed at contractors. It's not that they won't go in to find some of these items, but it's really not aimed at doing day-to-day business with them. And it's a way to sort of soften the edges from the industrial feel that they have with the big orange stores. They've lowered the ceilings here. They have things that they're calling client conference desks, which you can sit down and design projects with. And basically what they've done is designed this with the women in mind.
Well, you know, we've talked many times on the radio before about Lowe's and how Lowe's is beating Home Depot when it comes to, you know, the ladies' preference on where they'd rather shop. So I guess they're going to test this and see if they can learn a few things.
Well, and it looks like that's what they're doing. Now, there's no lumber. There's no building materials. You can't buy bricks. There's no power tools, or at least there's no, you know, heavy-duty power tools.
Yeah.
They've got, and this is something that they took from a Home Depot in Chicago, where they had a little area. You know, they have an urban store in Chicago on the near north side where they had a home decorator's collection, sort of a home decorator's corner, which is a furniture, catalog furniture business that they bought a couple of years ago. And they've done this same thing at, you know, at these stores, except they're about 11,000 square feet, and it's, I can't tell you that I've even seen what this home decorator's furniture looks like, but that's one of the products that they're offering in there. And I guess a lot of other furnishings as well. They're not going to have the outdoor garden area like we remember from the Home Depot stores. They're saying here it's going to be a lot more sophisticated. They've got evidently orchids and other more expensive green-type products, plants and so on, and pottery and other things like that. And it sounds to me like it's an interesting concept. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I hope it's not another distraction. You know, they've gotten off on some of these tangents before, and you know, if they can use it as a test store, I guess maybe it'll tell them some things on how to fix and balance their regular stores. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see and watch.
Well, it is interesting in that the new CEO, Frank Blake, has been saying they want to concentrate on their core retail business, which of course is the green big box.
Yeah.
They've closed a flooring store in Dallas. They've evidently scaled back on the gasoline station, you know, addition.
Right.
And they're going to close, according to reports, their landscape supply chain.
Got out of HD Supply.
So it is kind of interesting at this point to take their eye off the ball with yet another expansion outside of the current big box. I find that very interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's take a break. I'm going to come back and change the subject. Kent Parr is with us, a publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. This is Floor Radio. This is Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. We have Kemp Haar on the line this morning, the publisher of Floor Focus magazine. He's also a partner in the website floordaily.net. We're looking back at some of the events and some of the news items that have occurred over the last 7 days in this business. Another news item, Kemp, here is Nora, the rubber people, the Frutenberg.
Yeah, the
building systems, the people who make Nora rubber, under really new management.
Freudenberg sold them, didn't they?
Exactly right. And there's two private equity firms that now are the proud owners.
Yeah.
And it looks like they've got some interesting plans afoot. And, you know, rubber flooring is an interesting product category, and I guess one that, holds some real potential here in the U.S.
Yeah, you know, they named that company, Nora, actually came from, they named it after this chemist that actually perfected the rubber compounding process for shoe soles, for, you know, making shoe soles. And then after, I don't know, somewhere in the late 40s, they moved from making shoe soles into making rubber flooring.
And, well, didn't the company make shoe soles right up to the present time?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
I think so.
But now, you know, within the rubber floor market, you start thinking, where do you see it? You see it on stair treads. You see it home gym floors.
Airports.
And then the Cove base, that's, even though that's on the side, that's still considered a flooring product.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, the big players in the business are Ropey, Flexco, Johnsonite, Burke Mercer, you know, but, and those are, those products are made in this country. But, you know, Nora's got, 6 or 7% of the U.S. market, and so it's interesting news. Worldwide, they do, 160 million euros?
Something like that. And it sounds like with this new organization taking the reins here, they've got some plans for expansion. And I have to imagine that includes here in the U.S. as well.
You know, I looked at our U.S. Floor report that we put out, and right now the rubber floor market is a 3 billion square foot market, and I think if I looked at that right, that's what it said. But the interesting thing is it's supposed to grow 30% in the next 3 to 4 years. So, you know, this might be a good acquisition.
Well, I think it's a hot item, and certainly on the commercial side, there's lots of places where this is sort of standard floor covering. So I suspect, and, you know, I think we're even seeing it expand. I think there's even some residential uses at this point for it. So who knows where we'll see it. And also, I've seen a lot of this in the retail arena.
Yeah, I think, you know, as more and more people become fitness-oriented, you're going to see, you know, these home gyms and exercise areas in the homes, well, and they put rubber floor down.
Exactly right. Let me change the subject here. We got about another minute here until we need to take a break. There have been some job cuts around this industry, as always during times that are slim. And one of the ones that I have here on the top of my list is Boyu announcing last week that they closed a yarn plant. That's a yarn spinning plant in Boaz, Alabama.
Yeah, that, you know, that old plant was one of the, that was part of the Marlin acquisition. That was an 80-year-old spun polyester plant. So it's very similar to that plant that Shaw closed a couple of we talked 2 or 3 weeks ago. You know, that's technology that you don't see as much. You know, with everybody going to a filament type of yarn system and carpet. So that's probably, they're just using this opportunity for a downtick in the marketplace to, you know, to offload some of this more obsolete equipment.
Right, and the plant that you were referring to, the Shaw plant, was in Andalusia, Alabama.
That's right.
And that was what, a nylon?
That's right, that was nylon, and this one's polyester.
I see. And I'm sure there's lots of other closures around that we don't, you know, that we really haven't gotten any news on, but that's just pretty much standard operating procedure for some of this, you know, some of the slowdown that we're seeing.
Apparently, unemployment in Boaz is really low, so Boyu was hoping that most of these employees, if they couldn't place them somewhere else, could get absorbed in some other employment opportunities.
Yeah, well, I hope that pans out. Let's pause here. I'm going to change the subject when we come back. Kemp Haar is with us. He's the publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We'll be right back. This is Floor Radio. This is Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. We're talking this morning with Kemp Haar, the publisher of Floor Focus magazine. Kemp's also a partner in the website floordaily.net. We're looking back at some of the news that's occurred in this business over the last week or so. And, you know, we have talked, I guess, over the last several programs about intellectual property and the hard surface arena and some of the changes there. And I think we've talked almost every time about Vellinga and the Swedish organization. And they've just announced earlier this week that they are in the throes of building a new R&D center, and that is in Sweden, obviously, which is where they're located. And it sounds like they've got a lot of energy here and see a lot of expansion in terms of intellectual property in the future.
You know, it sounds, I read that release, and it looks like they just really are planning on building kind of a think tank around flooring. And it was interesting to see all of the past inventions that they are claiming responsibility for. They're the first company to come out with laminate flooring in 77. Although, you know, if you think about it, Pergo's really got the name, you know, behind being one of the first ones out there.
I think there may have been some connection there back when.
Is that right?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, and then they're the first company to come out with the mechanical locking system for the floating floor in 94. And the first parquet floor with the mechanical locking system in 99. The first laminate floor installed in advanced, you know, herringbone patterns in 2003, and then that one we talked about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the locking system that has the displaceable tongue called the 5G technology.
Right, and that was one that I guess they released a little bit prematurely because of some litigation that's taking place.
Is that right?
Yes. And it's not, I mean, this is a sizable place. This is about, it's 17,000 square meters, which I figured is about 180 plus 1,000 square feet, and they have, and I'm looking here for the number. They have, you know, quite a number of employees in this operation.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a little garage operation here.
No, they're putting some stuff out. They have 600 patents in over 40 countries.
That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. It is.
And one of the things I wanted to mention, and I planned to do yesterday an interview with some of the people at Shaw. You know, they have rolled out something called Lock in Place.
Yeah, I was listening to somebody talk about that the other day, and was wondering if that was tied in with some of these Belange patents.
I don't know, and I will find out, but I don't know as of this point. I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but this is a new locking system, and Shaw said they'll be the first player in North America that will be utilizing this. So, and, you know, I have to imagine that whenever the bar is raised in terms of intellectual property, you know, in this hard surface laminate area primarily, that, you know, people automatically want to move to some new technology and license that. I guess this is a pretty good business, being in this intellectual property business.
Yeah, and you know, the benefit of this lock-in-place apparently is speed of installation. So apparently, you know, they had a quote in their release from James Mullins, who's their, you know, their technical uh-huh. installation guy, and he says that he hadn't seen a floor that goes any faster than this one.
And I think once you have a floor that allows you to do this, then I guess everybody else is at a disadvantage,
right?
Especially in certain parts of the market where, you know, before it would have been the builder market, where ease of installation would certainly be a major addition. Although I don't imagine laminate is that big in the builder market anyway. But if this is available in hardwood, one more thing I wanted to mention here before we ran out of time, and we're just about out of time here. If I'm not mistaken, the next issue that you're going to be doing is your design survey.
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up. It's the top 250 design survey, and, you know, this is our biggest issue. We've got almost 90 pages in this magazine, and the lead or main feature is about, you know, doing some research and finding out what's going on in the contract-specified market. That you know, especially what's being specified by these top 250 design firms, and you know, I invite the people. They'll be getting it in the mail probably, well, definitely before we talk again, sometime probably around Monday of next week, they'll start seeing it. And you know, we're talking about color trends, segment trends, issues they're facing, who they believe in for advice, you know, who they like to talk to, and what sectors are up, what sectors are down. It's very interesting information.
And also who their favorite suppliers are.
That's right.
That
the last four pages is them talking about who they like to work with, both on the soft side and the hard side.
Yeah, it's always a lot of fun talking about that and reading that. What issue will that be in?
That's this the October issue, which it left our printer today, and it since it goes second class, it takes a few days to get you know, throughout the U.S.
I'll be looking forward to that.
Okay.
Because I'm the last one to ever get an issue out here in the Thule's. But nonetheless, I'll hear all about it before I get my copy.
All right.
Okay, Kemp, always a pleasure, and we will talk to you 1 week from today.
Okay, enjoyed it.
Yes, sir. We've been talking with Kemp Haar. He's the publisher of Floor Focus magazine. This is Floor Radio.